I looked down at the tiny piece of apple I had left. Not enough to grip and twist. I bit off the last of the apple and tossed the stem. Looks like I'm destined to be loveless.
There you go with 7 words again, she said with a smile. You do realize you always do that.
It took me a minute to realize what she was referring to, but before I could respond, Denner had moved on.
I heard the seeds are supposed to be bad for you, she said. They have arsenic in them.
That's just a wives' tale, I said. It was one of the 10,000 questions I'd asked Ben when he'd travelled with the troop. It's not arsenic, it's cyanide, and there's not enough to hurt you unless you eat buckets full.
Oh.
Denner gave the remains of her apple a speculative look, then began to eat it from the bottom up. You were telling me about what happened to Master Ash before I rudely interrupted, I prompted, gently as I could. Denner shrugged.
There isn't much left to tell. I saw the fire, came closer, heard more shouting and commotion.
And the fire? She hesitated.
Blue.
I felt a sort of dark anticipation rise up in me. Excitement at finally being close to answers about the Chandrian, fear at the thought of being close to them.
What did the ones look like who attacked you? How did you get away?
She gave a bitter laugh.
Nobody attacked me. I saw shapes outlined against the fire and ran like billy hell.
She lifted her bandaged arm and touched the side of her head.
I must have gone headfirst into a tree and knocked myself out. I woke up in town this morning. That's the other reason I needed to come back, she said. I don't know if Master Ash might still be out here. I didn't hear anyone in town talking about finding an extra body, but I couldn't ask without making everyone suspicious.
And he wouldn't like that, I said. Denner nodded.
I don't doubt he'll turn this into another test to see how well I can keep my mouth shut.
She gave me a significant look.
Speaking of which,
I'll make a point of being terribly surprised if we find anyone, I said. Don't worry. She smiled nervously.
Thanks. I just hope he's alive. I've invested 2 whole span trying to win him over.
She took a final drink out of my water bottle and handed it back to me.
Let's go have a look around, shall we?
Denner came unsteadily to her feet, and I tucked my water bottle back into my travel sack, watching her out of the corner of my eye. I had worked in the Medicare for the better part of a year. Denner had been struck on her left temple hard enough to blacken her eye and bruise her well past her ear into her hairline. Her right arm was bandaged, and from the way she carried herself, I guess she had some serious bruises along her left side, if not a few broken ribs. If she had run into a tree, it must have been an oddly shaped tree. But still, I didn't make a point of it. Didn't press her. How could I? I too knew what it was like to have secrets. The farm was nowhere near as gruesome as it could have been. The barn was nothing but a jumble of ash and planking. To one side, a water trough stood next to a charred windmill. The wind tried to spin the wheel, but it only had 3 fins left, and it simply swayed back and forth, back and forth. There were no bodies, only the deep ruts wagon wheels had cut into the turf when they had come to haul them away.
How many people were at the wedding?
I asked.
26, counting the bride and groom.
Denner kicked idly at the charred timber half buried in ashes near the remains of the barn.
Good thing it usually rains in the evenings here, or this whole side of the mountain would be on fire by now.
Any simmering feuds lurking around here? I asked.
Rival families? Another suitor looking for revenge? Of course,
Denner said easily.
Little town like this, that's what keeps things on an even keel. These folk will carry a grudge for 50 years about what their Tom said about our Kari.
She shook her head.
But nothing of the killing sort. These were normal folk.
Normal but wealthy, I thought to myself as I walked toward the farmhouse. This was the sort of house only a wealthy family could afford to build. The foundation and the lower walls were solid grey stone. The upper story was plaster and timber with stone reinforcing the corners. Still, the walls sagged inward on the verge of collapse. The windows and door gaped with dark soot licking out around the edges. I peered through the doorway and saw the grey stone of the walls charred black. There was broken crockery scattered among the remains of furniture and charred floorboards. "If your things were in there," I said to Denner, "I think they're as good as gone. I could go in for a look."
"Don't be stupid," she said. "This whole thing is about to come down."
She knocked a knuckle against the doorframe. It echoed hollowly. Curious at the odd sound of it, I went over to look. I picked at the doorpost with a fingernail, and a long splinter the size of my palm peeled away with little resistance.
"This is more like driftwood than timber," I said. "After spending all this money, why skimp on the doorframe?"
Denner shrugged.
"Maybe the heat of the fire did it?"
I nodded absently and continued to wander around, looking things over. I bent to pick up a piece of charred shingle and muttered a binding under my breath. A brief chill spread up my arms, and flame flickered to life along the rough edge of the wood.
"That's something you don't see every day,"
Denner said. Her voice was calm, but it was a forced calm, as if she was trying hard to sound nonchalant. It took me a moment to figure out what she was talking about. Simple sympathy like this was so commonplace in the university that I hadn't even thought about how it would look to someone else. "Just a little meddling with dark forces, better left alone," I said lightly, holding up the burning shingle.
"The fire was blue last night?"
She nodded.
"Like a coal gas flame, like the lamps they have in Annalyn."
The shingle was burning an ordinary, cheerful orange. No trace of blue about it, but it could have been blue last night. I dropped the shingle and crushed it out with my boot. I circled the house again. Something was bothering me, but I couldn't put my finger on it. I wanted to go inside for a look around.
"The fire really wasn't that bad," I called out to Denner. "What did you end up leaving inside?"
"Not that bad," she said incredulously as she came around the corner.
"The place is a husk."
I pointed. "The roof isn't burned through except right by the chimney. That means the fire probably didn't damage the second story very much. What of yours was in there?"
"I had some clothes, and a lyre Master Ash bought for me."
"You play lyre?" I was surprised.
"How many strings?"
7, I'm just learning."
She gave a brief, humorless laugh.
"I was learning. I'm good enough for a country wedding, and that's about it."
"Don't waste yourself on the lyre," I said. "It's an archaic instrument with no room for subtlety." "Not to disparage your choice of instrument," I said quickly. "It's just that your voice deserves better accompaniment than a lyre can give you. If you're looking for a straight-string instrument you can carry with you, go for a half-harp."
"You're sweet," she said. "But I didn't pick it. Mr. Ash did. I'll push him for a harp next time."
She looked around aimlessly and sighed.
"If he's still alive."
I peered in one of the gaping windows to look around, only to have a chunk of the windowsill snap off in my hands when I leaned on it.
"This one's rotten too," I said, crumbling it in my hands.
"Exactly." Denner took hold of my arm and pulled me away from the window.
"The place is just waiting to fall in on you. It's not worth going in. Like you said, it's just a lyre."
I let myself be led away. "Your patron's body might be up there." Denner shook her head.
"He's not the sort to run into a burning building and get himself trapped."
She gave me a hard look.
"What do you think you're going to find in there anyway?"
"I don't know," I admitted. "But if I don't go inside, I don't know where else to look for clues about what really happened here."
"What rumors did you hear anyway?"
Denner asked. "Not much," I admitted, thinking back to what the bargeman had said. "A bunch of people were killed at a wedding, everyone dead, torn apart like ragdolls. Blue fire."
"They weren't really torn apart," Denner said. "From what I heard in town, it was a lot of knife and sword work."
I hadn't seen anyone wearing so much as a belt knife since I'd been in town. The closest thing had been farmers with sickles and scythes in the fields. I looked back at the sagging farmhouse, sure that I was missing something.
"So what do you think happened here?"
she asked.
"I don't know," I said. I was half expecting to find nothing.
You know how rumors get blown out of proportion. I looked around. I would have written the blue fire off to rumor if you hadn't been here to confirm it.
"Other people saw it last night," she said. "Things were still smoldering when they came for the bodies and found me."
I looked around, irritated. I still felt like I was missing something, but I couldn't think of what in the world it could be.
What did they think in town? I asked.
Folk weren't really talkative around me, she said bitterly. But I caught a bit of the conversation between the constable and the mayor. Folk are whispering about demons. The blue fire made sure of that. Some folk were talking about shamblemen. I expect the harvest festival will be more traditional than usual this year. Lots of fires and cider and straw men.
I looked around again. The collapsed wreckage of the barn, a windmill with three fins, and a burned-out husk of a house. Frustrated, I ran my hands through my hair, still sure I was missing something. I'd expected to find something, anything.
As I stood there, it occurred to me how foolish the hope was. What had I hoped to find? A footprint? A scrap of cloth from someone's cloak? Some crumpled note with a vital piece of information conveniently written out for me to find? That sort of thing only happened in stories. I pulled out my water bottle and drank off the last of it.
Well, I'm done here, I said as I walked over to the water trough. What are you planning to do next?
I need to look around a bit, she said. There's a chance my gentleman friend is out there, hurt.
I looked out over the rolling hills, gold with autumn leaves and wheat fields, green with pasture and stands of pine and fir. Scattered throughout were the dark scars of bluffs and stone outcroppings.
There's a lot of ground to cover, I said.
She nodded, her expression resigned. I've got to at least make an effort.
Would you like some help? I asked.
I know a little woodcraft.
I certainly wouldn't mind the company, she said, especially considering the fact that there may be a troop of marauding demons in these parts. Besides, you already offered to make me dinner tonight.
That I did.
I made my way past the charred windmill to the iron hand pump. I grabbed the handle, leaned my weight against it, and staggered as it snapped off at the base. I stared at the broken pump handle. It was rusted through to the center, crumbling away in gritty sheets of red rust. In a sudden flash, I remembered coming back to find my troop killed that evening so many years ago. I remembered reaching out a hand to steady myself and finding the strong iron bands on a wagon's wheel rusted away. I remembered the thick, solid wood falling to pieces when I touched it.
Quoth?
Denna's face was close to mine, her expression concerned.
Are you all right? Tell you black and sit down before you fall down. Are you hurt?
I moved to sit on the edge of the water trough, but the thick planking crumbled under my weight like a rotten stump. I let gravity pull me the rest of the way down and sat on the grass. I held the rusted through pump handle up for Denna to see. She frowned at it.
That pump was new. The father was bragging about how much it had cost to get a well set up here at the top of the hill. He kept saying that no daughter of his would have to carry buckets uphill 3 times a day.
What do you think happened here? I asked.
Truthfully.
She looked around, the bruise on her temple a sharp contrast against her pale skin.
I think when I'm done looking for my patron to be, I'm going to wash my hands of this place and never look back.
That's not an answer, I said. What do you think happened? She looked at me for a long moment before responding.
Something bad. I've never seen a demon, and I don't ever expect to, but I've never seen the King of Vint either.
Do you know that children's song? Denna looked at me blankly. So I sang.
When the hearth fire turns to blue, what to do, what to do? Run outside, run and hide. When your bright sword turns to rust, who to trust, who to trust? Stand alone, standing stone.
Denna grew paler as she realized what I was implying. She nodded and chanted the chorus softly to herself.
See a woman, pale as snow, silent come and silent go. What's their plan? What's their plan? Chandrian, Chandrian.
Denna and I sat in the patchwork shade of the autumn trees, out of sight of the ruined farm. Chandrian. the Chandrian were really here. I was still trying to collect my thoughts when she spoke.
Is this what you were expecting to find? She asked.
It's what I was looking for, I said. The Chandrian were here less than a day ago. But I didn't expect this. I mean, when you're a child and you go digging for buried treasure, you don't expect to find any. You go looking for Denelings and fairies in the forest, but you don't find them. They'd killed my troop, and they'd killed this wedding party.
Hell, I go looking for you and Imre all the time, but I don't actually expect to find you.
I trailed off, realizing that I was blathering. Some of the tension bled out of Denna as she laughed. There was no mocking in it, only amusement.
So am I a lost treasure, or a failing?
You're both. Hidden, valuable, much sought and seldom found.
I looked up at her, my mind hardly attending to what was coming out of my mouth.
There's much of the Fae in you as well.
They are real. The Chandrian were real.
You're never where I look for you, then you appear all unexpected like a rainbow.
Over the last year, I'd held a silent fear in my secret heart. I worried at times that the memory of my troop's death and the Chandrian had just been a strange sort of grief dream my mind had created to help me deal with the loss of my entire world. But now I had something resembling proof. They were real. My memory was real. I wasn't crazy.
When I was a child, I chased a rainbow for an hour one evening. Got lost in the woods. My parents were frantic. I thought I could catch up to it. I could see where it should touch the ground. That's what you're...
Denna touched my arm. I felt the sudden warmth of her hand through my shirt. I drew a deep breath and smelled the smell of her hair, warm with the sun, the smell of green grass and her clean sweat and her breath and apples. The wind sighed through the trees and lifted her hair so that it tickled my face. Only when sudden silence filled the clearing did I realize that I'd been keeping up a steady stream of mindless chatter for several minutes. I flushed with embarrassment and looked around, suddenly remembering where I was.
You were a little wild around the eyes there, she said gently. I don't think I've ever seen you out of sorts before.
I took another slow breath.
I'm out of sorts all the time, I said. I just don't show it. My point exactly.
She took a step back, her hand slowly sliding down the length of my arm until it fell away.
So what now?
I have no idea. I looked around aimlessly.
That doesn't sound like you either, she said. I'd like a drink of water, I said,
then gave a sheepish grin at how childish it sounded. She grinned back at me.
That's a good place to start, she teased. After that?
I'd like to know why the Chandrian attacked here.
What's their plan, eh?
She looked serious.
There isn't much middle ground with you, is there? All you want is a drink of water and the answer to a question that folk have been guessing at since, well, since forever.
What do you think happened here? I asked. Who do you think killed these folks? She crossed her arms in front of her chest.
I don't know, she said. It could have been all manner of...
She stopped, chewing on her lower lip.
No, that's a lie, she said at last. It sounds strange to say, but I think it was them. It sounds like something out of a story, so I don't want to believe it, but I do.
She looked at me nervously.
That makes me feel better.
I stood up. I thought I might be a little crazy.
You still might be, she said. I'm not a good touchstone to use for judging your sanity.
Do you feel crazy? She shook her head, a half-smile curling the corner of her mouth.
No. How about you?
Not particularly.
That's either good or bad, depending, she said. How do you propose we go about solving the mystery of the ages?
I need to think on it for a while, I said. In the meantime, let's find your mysterious Master Ash.
I'd love to ask him a few questions about what he saw back at the Morthan farm. Denner nodded. I was thinking I would head back to where he left me behind that bluff, then look between there and the farm, she shrugged. It's not much of a plan.
It gives us a place to start, I said. If he came back and found you were gone, he might have left a trail that we could pick up.
Denner led the way through the woods. It was warmer there, the trees kept the wind at bay, but the sun could still peer through as many of the trees were nearly bare. Only the tall oaks were still holding all their leaves, like self-conscious old men. As we walked, I tried to think of what reason the Chandrian could have had for killing these people. Was there any similarity between this wedding party and my troop? Someone's parents have been singing the entirely wrong sort of songs.
What did you sing last night, I asked, for the wedding?
The usual, Denner said, kicking through a pile of leaves. Bright stuff. Penny whistle, come wash in the river, copper bottom pot, she chuckled. Aunt Emmy's tub.
You didn't, I said aghast. At a wedding?
A drunk grandfather asked for it. She shrugged as she made her way through a thick tangle of yellowing vanabia. There were a few raised eyebrows, but not many. They're earthy folk around here.
We walked a little longer in silence. The wind gusted in the high branches above us, but where we trudged along it was just a whisper.
I don't think I've ever heard come wash before.
I'd have thought...
Denner looked over her shoulder at me.
Are you trying to trick me into singing for you?
Of course.
She turned and smiled warmly at me, her hair falling into her face.
Maybe later. I'll sing for my supper.
She led us around a tall outcrop of dark stone. It was chillier here, out of the sun.
I think he left me here, she said, looking around uncertainly. Everything looks different during the day.
Do you want to search the route back toward the farm or circle out from here?
Circles, she said. But you'll have to show me what I'm supposed to be looking for. I'm a city girl.
I briefly showed her what little I knew of woodcraft. I showed her the sort of ground where a boot will leave a scuff or a print. I pointed out how the pile of leaves she had walked through were obviously disturbed, and how the branches of the vanabia were broken and torn where she'd struggled through. We stayed close together, as two pairs of eyes are better than one, and neither of us was eager to set off alone. We worked back and forth, making larger and larger arcs away from the bluff. After 5 minutes, I began to sense the futility of it. There was just too much forest. I could tell that Denner quickly came to the same conclusion. The storybook clues we hoped to find once again failed to show themselves. There were no torn scraps of cloth clinging to branches, no deep boot prints or abandoned campsites. We did find mushrooms, acorns, mosquitoes, and raccoon scat, cleverly concealed by pine needles.
Do you hear water? Denner asked.
I nodded.
I could really do with a drink, I said, and a bit of a wash.
We wandered wordlessly away from our search, neither one of us wanting to admit that we were eager to give it up, both of us feeling in our bones how pointless it was. We followed the sound of running water down the hill, until we pushed through a thick stand of pine trees and came upon a lovely deep stream about 20 feet across. There was no scent of foundry runoff in this water, so we drank, and I topped off my water bottle. I knew the shape of stories. When a young couple comes to a river, there is a definite shape to what will happen next. Denner would bathe on the other side of the nearby fir tree, out of sight on a sandy bit of shore. I would move off a discreet distance, out of sight, but within easy talking distance. Then something would happen. She would slip and turn her ankle or cut her foot on a sharp stone, and I'd be forced to rush over, and then... But this was not a story of two young lovers meeting by the river. So I splashed some water on my face and changed into my clean shirt behind a tree. Denner dipped her head in the water to cool off. Her glistening hair was dark as ink until she wrung it out with her hands. Then we sat on a stone, dandling our feet in the water and enjoying each other's company as we rested. We shared an apple, passing it back and forth between bites, which is close to kissing, if you've never kissed before. And after some gentle goading, Denner sang for me. one verse of Come Wash, a verse I had never heard before, which I suspect she made up on the spot. I will not repeat it here, as she sang it to me, not to you, and since this is not the story of two young lovers meeting by the river, it has no particular place here, and I will keep it to myself.
Chapter 73 Pegs.
Not long after the apple was gone, Denner and I pulled our feet out of the water and gathered ourselves to leave. I considered leaving off my boots, as feet that can run bare over Tarbean's rooftops are in no danger of being hurt by the roughest forest floor. But I didn't want to appear uncivilized, so I pulled on my socks, despite the fact that they were damp and clammy with sweat. I was lacing up my boot when I heard a faint noise off in the forest, out of sight, behind a stand of thick pine trees. Quietly, I reached out to Denner, touched her shoulder lightly to get her attention, and held my finger to my lips.
What?
She mouthed silently. I moved closer, stepping carefully to make as little sound as possible.
I think I hear something,
I said, my head close to hers.
I'm going to go have a look.
Like hell you are,
she whispered, her face pale in the shadow of the pines.
That's exactly what Ash said before he left last night. I'll be damned if you're going to disappear on me too.
Before I could reply, I heard more movement through the trees. Brush rustling, the sharp snap of a dry pine branch. As the noises got louder, I could pick out the sound of something big breathing heavily. Then a low, animal grunt. Not human. Not the Chandrian. My relief was short-lived as I heard another grunt and some snuffling. A wild boar, probably heading for the river. Get behind me, I said to Denner. Most people don't realize how dangerous wild boars are, especially in the fall, when the males are fighting for dominance. Sympathy wouldn't be any good. I had no source, no link. I didn't have so much as a stout stick. Would it be distracted by the few apples I had left? The boar shouldered aside the low-hanging boughs of the nearby pine, snuffling and huffing. It probably weighed twice as much as me. It gave a great guttural grunt as it looked up and saw us. It lifted its head, nose wriggling, trying to catch our scent.
Don't run, or it'll chase you,
I said softly, stepping slowly in front of Denner. At a loss for anything better, I brought out my folding knife and worked it open with my thumb.
Just back up and get into the river. They aren't good swimmers.
I don't think she's dangerous,
Denner said in a normal tone behind me.
She looks more curious than angry.
She paused.
Not that I don't appreciate your noble urges and all.
At second glance, I saw Denner was right. It was a sow, not a boar, and under a patina of mud it was the pink of a domestic pig, not the brown bristle of a wild one. Bored, it lowered its head, and began to root around among the shrubbery below the pines. Only then did I realize I was poised in a sort of half-crouch, one hand out like a wrestler. In the other hand, I held my pitiful folding knife, so small it needed several runs at halving a good-sized apple. Worst of all, I was only wearing one boot. I looked ridiculous, crazy as Elodin on his worst day. My face flushed hot, and I knew I must be red as a beet.
Merciful Tailu, I feel like an idiot.
It's rather flattering, actually, Denner said. With the exception of some rather irritating posturing in bars, I don't know if I've ever had anyone actually leap to my defense before.
Yes, of course. I kept my eyes down as I tugged on my other sock and boot, too embarrassed to look her in the eye.
It's every girl's dream to be rescued from someone's pet pig.
I'm serious. I looked up and saw some gentle amusement in her face, but no mocking.
You looked fierce, like a wolf with all its hackles up.
She stopped, looking up at my head.
Or a fox, I suppose. You're too red for a wolf.
I relaxed a bit. A bristling fox is better than a deranged, half-shod idiot.
You're holding your knife wrong, though,
she said matter-of-factly, nodding toward my hand.
If you actually stabbed anyone, your grip would slip and you'd cut your own thumb.
Reaching out, she took hold of my fingers and moved them slightly.
If you hold it like this, your thumb is safe.
The downside is that you lose a lot of the mobility in your wrist. Been in a lot of knife fights, have you? I asked, bemused.
Not as many as you might think, she said with a sly smile. It's another page out of that worn book you men are so fond of using to court us.
She rolled her eyes, exasperated.
I can't count the men who have tried to seduce me away from my virtue by teaching me how to defend it.
I've never seen you wearing a knife, I pointed out. Why is that?
Why would I wear a knife?
Denner asked.
I am a delicate blossom and all that. A woman who goes around wearing a knife is obviously looking for trouble.
She reached deep into her pocket and brought out a long, slender piece of metal, glittering all along one edge.
However, a woman who carries a knife is ready for trouble. Generally speaking, it's easier to appear harmless. It's less trouble all around.
Only the fact that she was so matter-of-fact kept me from being startled. Her knife wasn't much larger than mine, but hers wasn't a folding knife. It was a straight piece of metal with thin leather wrapping the grip. It clearly wasn't designed for eating or performing odd jobs around the campfire. It looked more like one of the razor-sharp surgical knives from the Medica.
How do you keep that in your pocket without cutting yourself to shreds? I asked.
Denner turned sideways to show me.
My pocket is slit all along the inside. It straps to my leg. That's why it's so flat, so you can't see I'm wearing it.
She gripped the leather handle and held her knife in front of her for me to see.
Like this. You want to keep your thumb along the flat.
Are you trying to seduce me away from my virtue by teaching me how to defend it? I asked.
Like you have any virtue, she laughed. I'm trying to keep you from cutting up your pretty hands the next time you have to save a girl from a pig.
She cocked her head to the side.
Speaking of, did you know that when you're angry, your eyes...
Lew pegs!
A voice came through the trees, accompanied by the dull clank of a bell.
Peg, peg, peg!
The great sow perked up and trotted back through the brush towards the sound of the voice. Denner took a moment to replace her knife while I picked up my travel sack. Following the pig through the trees, we spotted a man downstream with a half dozen large sows milling around him. There was an old bristling boar, too, and a score of assorted piglets scampering underfoot. The swineherd eyed us suspiciously.
Hello!
He shouted.
Don't be afeard! They wait bait!
He was lean and leathery from the sun, with a scraggling beard. His long stick had a crude bronze bell hanging from it, and he wore a tattered bag over one shoulder. He smelled better than you'd probably expect, as ranging pigs keep themselves cleaner than those kept penned. Even if he had smelled like a penned pig, I couldn't really hold it against him, as I had no doubt smelled worse at various points in my life.
I thought I heard somewhat down to water a ways, he said,
his accent so thick and oily you could almost taste it. My mother referred to it as a deep valley accent, since you only found them in towns that didn't have much contact with the outside world. Even in small rural towns like Trebon, folk didn't have much of an accent these days. Living in Tarbin and Imre for so long, I hadn't heard a dialect this thick in years. The fellow must have grown up in a truly remote location, probably tucked far back into the mountains. He came up to where we stood, his weathered face grim as he squinted at us.
What are the two of you doing out here?
He said suspiciously.
I thought I heard Sangan.
That were my cousin,
I said, making a nod toward Denner.
Should he have a lovely voice for Scarlin, ain't she?
I held out my hand.
I'm great glad to meet you, sir. You clep me kelther.
He looked taken aback when he heard me speak, and a good portion of the grim suspicion faded from his expression.
Pleased I'm certain, Master Kelther, he said, shaking my hand. It's a rare treat to meet a fella respects proper. Grummers round these ports sound like they've got a mouthful of wool.
I laughed.
My father used to say, wool in the mouth and wool in the head.
He grinned and shook my hand.
My name is Skyman Seamanfennig.
You got name enough for a kang, I said. Would you be terrible offended if I'd paired it down to shame?
All my friends there,
he grinned at me, clapping me on the back.
Shame will do if I ain't for lovely young folk like yourselves.
He looked back and forth between Denner and myself. Denner, much to her credit, hadn't so much as batted an eye at my sudden change in dialect.
Forgive me,
I said, making a gesture in her direction.
Shame,
That is my most favourite cousin.
Dina,
Denna said. I dropped my voice to a stage whisper.
Sweet lass, but she is terrible shy. You won't be here and make a lot of her, I'm afeard.
Denna picked up her part without the least hesitation, looking down at her feet and twining her fingers together nervously. She glanced up long enough to smile at the swineherd, then dropped her eyes again, making such a picture of awkward bashfulness that I was almost fooled myself. Sheem touched his forehead politely and nodded.
Pleased to meet you, Denna. I have never heard a voice say lovely in all my life, he said,
pushing his shapeless hat back onto his head a bit. When Denna still wouldn't meet his eye, he turned back to me.
Fine looking herd,
I nodded in the direction of the scattered pigs that were meandering through the trees. He shook his head, chuckling.
Nay a herd! Sheep and cows make a herd! Pigs make a sounder!
Is that so? I said. Is there a chance, friend Sheen, that I might buy a fine wee pig from you? My cousin and I messed her down today.
Might do,
he said cautiously, his eyes flickering to my purse.
If you dress it for us, I'll give you 4 jots,
I said, knowing it to be a generous price.
But that's only if you'll do us the favour of sitting down and sharing a bait with us.
It was a casual testing of the waters. People in solitary jobs like shepherds or swineherds tend to either enjoy their own company or be starved for conversation. I hoped Sheem was the latter. I needed information about the wedding, and none of the people in town seemed likely to talk. I gave him a sly grin and dipped my hand into my travel sack, bringing out the bottle of brand I'd bought from the tinker.
We've even got a dram of something to season it, if you're not opposed to taking a drop with a couple of strangers early in the day.
Denna caught her cue and glanced up in time to catch Sheen's eye, smiled shyly, then looked down again.
Well, my mother raised me proper,
the swineherd said piously, laying a hand flat on his chest.
I don't drink but when I'm thirsty or when the wind's blowing.
He tipped his shapeless hat dramatically off his head and made a half bow to us.
You seem to be good folk. I'd love to share a bit of Danny with you.
Sheem collared a young pig and carried it off a ways where he killed and dressed it using a long knife from his bag. I cleared away leaves and stacked some rocks to make a quick fire pit. After a minute, Denna came over with an armload of dry wood.
I assume we're pumping this fellow for every scrap of information we can get, she said quietly over my shoulder.
I nodded.
Sorry about the shy cousin bit, but
no, it was good thinking. I don't speak fluent bumpkin, and he'll be more likely to open up to someone who does. Her eyes flickered behind me.
He's almost done.
She wandered away towards the river. I covertly used some sympathy to start the fire, while Denna cobbled together a couple of cooking skewers out of forked willow branches. Sheem returned with the piglet neatly quartered. I passed around the bottle of brand while the pig cooked over the fire, smoking and dripping fat onto the coals. I made a show of drinking, just raising the bottle and wetting my mouth. Denna tipped it when it passed her by as well, and there was some rosy colour in her cheeks afterward. Sheem was as good as his word, and since the wind was blowing, it wasn't too long before his nose was comfortably red. Sheem and I chatted about nothing in particular until the pig was crispy and crackling on the outside. The more I listened, the more Sheem's accent faded into the back of my awareness, and I didn't need to concentrate so much on maintaining my own. By the time the pig was done, I was hardly aware of it at all.
You're right handy with a knife, I complimented Sheem. But I'm surprised you'd got a little fellow right here with the pegs close by.
He shook his head.
Pegs is vicious bastards.
He pointed to one of the sows trotting over to the patch of ground where he dressed the pig.
See? She's after this little one's lights. Pegs is clever, but they ain't a touch sentimental.
Declaring the pig nearly done, Sheem brought out a round farmer's loaf and shared it 3 ways.
Mutton, he grumbled to himself. Who wants mutton when you can have a nice piece of bacon?
He got to his feet and began to carve the pig with his long knife.
What would you like, little lady? Sheem said to Denna.
Only partial myself, she said. I'll take whatever you have handy there.
I was glad Sheem wasn't looking at me when she spoke. Her accent wasn't perfect, a little too long in the O's and too tight in the back of the throat, but it was really quite good.
No need to be shy about it, Sheem said.
There'll be plenty in to spare.
I've always had a liking for the hinder parts myself, Denna said,
but then flushed in embarrassment and looked down. Her O's were better this time. Sheem showed his true gentlemanly nature by refraining from any crude comments as he lay a thick slice of steaming meat atop her piece of bread.
Mind your fingers. Give it a minute to cool.
Everyone set to. Sheem served up seconds, then thirds. Before too long, we were licking the grease from our fingers and filling in the corners. I decided to get to business. If Sheem wasn't ready for some gossip now, he never would be.
I'm surprised to see you out and about with all the bad business lately.
What business is that?
He asked. He didn't know about the wedding massacre yet. Perfect. While he couldn't give me particulars about the attack itself, it meant he would be more willing to talk about the events leading up to the wedding. Even if everyone in town wasn't scared to death, I doubted I'd be able to find anyone willing to speak with frank honesty about the dead.
I heard they had some trouble up at Morthan Farm,
I said, keeping my information as vague and inoffensive as possible. He snorted.
Can't say as I find that startling in the least.
How's that? Sheem spat to the side.
Morthans are a right lot of bastards, ain't no better than they should be.
He shook his head again.
I keep off Borrahill, cos I've got one lick of good sense me mum beat into me. Morthan don't even have that.
It wasn't until I heard Sheem say the name of the place in his thick accent that I heard it properly. It wasn't Borrahill. It had nothing to do with a rill. It was Borrahill.
I don't even graze my bags there, but that daft bastard builds a house.
He shook his head, disgusted.
Didn't folk try and stop him?
Denner prompted. The swineherd made a rude noise.
Bah, Morthan ain't much for listening. Nothing plugs a man's ears like money.
Still, it's just a house, I said dismissively. Nae much harm in that.
Man wants a daughter to have a fine house with a view, that's all of the good, Sheem conceded. But when you're digging a foundation and you find bones and such and you don't stop, that's a whole new type of stupid.
He didn't,
Denna said aghast. Sheem nodded, leaning forward.
And that weren't the worst of it. He keeps digging and he hits stones. Then does he stop?
He sniffed.
He starts spunning them up, looking for more so he can use them for the house.
Why wouldn't he want to use the stones he found?
I asked. Sheem looked at me like I was daft.
Why do you build a house with barrow stones? Would you dig someone out of a barrow and give it to your daughter as a wedding present?
He found something? What was it?
I passed him the bottle.
Well, that's a great damn secret, ain't it?
Sheem said bitterly, taking another drink.
From what I hear, he was out there digging the house foundation and pulling up stones. Then he finds a little stone room all sealed up tight. But he makes everybody keep mum about what he finds there on account he wants it to be the great surprise at the wedding.
Some sort of treasure?
I asked.
Nay, money, he shook his head. Morthan's never been quiet about that. It were probably some sort of...
His mouth opened and closed a bit, searching for a word.
What do you call something old that rich folk put on a shelf to impress all their grummer friends?
I gave a helpless shrug.
An heirloom?
Denner said. Sheem laid his finger alongside his nose and then pointed to her, smiling.
That's it. Some flash to impress folk. He's a showy bastard, Morthan is.
So nobody knew what it was?
I asked. Sheem nodded.
It was only the handful that knew. Morthan and his brother, two of the sons, and maybe his wife. That lot of them been lording the big secret over folk for half a year, smug as pontiffs.
This cast everything in a new light. I needed to get back to the farm and look at things again.
Have you seen anyone around these parts today?
Denner asked.
We're looking for my uncle.
Sheem shook his head.
Can't say as I've had the pleasure.
I'm really worried about him,
she pressed.
I won't lie to you, dearie, he said. You've got reason to be worried if he's alone in these woods.
Are there bad folk around?
I asked.
Not like you're thinking, he said. I don't get down here but once a year in the fall. Forage for the hogs makes it worth my while, but only just. There's strange things in these woods, special off to the north.
He looked at Denna, then down at his feet, obviously unsure as to whether or not he should continue. This is exactly the sort of thing I wanted to know about, so I waved his comment away, hoping to provoke him.
Thank God telling us fairy starry, Sheem.
Sheem frowned.
2 nights ago, when I got up there, he hesitated, glancing at Denner, I tend to my personals. I saw lights up to the north. Big wash of blue flame, big as a bonfire. All of a sudden, he snapped his fingers. Then nothing. Happened 3 times, set a chill right down the middle of my back.
2 nights ago, I asked. The wedding had only been last night.
I said 2 nights, didn't I? Sheem
said.
I've been making my way south ever since. I want a part of whatever is making blue fire in the night up there.
Sheem, really, blue fire?
I'm not some lying roo spinning stories to scare you out of pennies, boy,
he said, plainly irritated.
I spent my life in these hells. Everyone knows that there's something out in the North Bluffs. There's a reason folks stay away from there.
Aren't there any farms out there? I asked.
There's no place to farm on the bluffs unless you're growing rocks, he said hotly. You think I don't know a candle or a campfire when I see one? It was blue, I tell you. Great billows of it.
He made an expansive gesture with his arms.
Like when you pour liquor on a fire.
I let it go and turned the conversation elsewhere. Before too long, Sheem gave a deep sigh and got to his feet.
The pegs will have picked this place clean by now,
he said, picking up his walking stick and shaking it so the crude bell clanked loudly. Pigs came trotting up obediently from all directions.
Hello, pegs,
he shouted.
Pegs, 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 come on, you counts.
I wrapped up the remains of the cooked pig in a piece of sackcloth, and Denner made a few trips with the water bottle and doused the fire. By the time we were finished, Sheem had his sounder in order. It was larger than I thought, more than 2 dozen full-grown sows, plus the young pigs and the boar with the grey bristling back. He gave a brief wave, and without any further word headed off, the bell on his walking stick clanking as he walked, and his pigs trailing in a loose mob behind him.
Well, that wasn't terribly subtle, Denner said. I had to push him a bit, I said. Superstitious folk don't like to talk about things they're afraid of. He was about to clam up, and I needed to know what he'd seen in the forest.
I could have got it out of him, she said. More flies with honey and all that.
You probably could have, I admitted as I shouldered my travel sack and began to walk.
I thought you said you didn't speak, bumpkin.
I've got a mimic's ear, she said, with an indifferent shrug. I pick up things like that pretty quickly.
Surprise the hell out of me, I spat. Damn, I'm going to be a whole span of days getting rid of that accent, like a piece of gristle in my teeth.
Denner was eyeing the surrounding landscape despondently. I guess we should get back to beating the bushes then. Find my patron and find you some answers.
No point, really, I said.
I know, but I can't give up without at least trying.
That's not what I mean.
Look.
I pointed to where the pigs had rooted around in the dirt and leaves, going after some choice morsel. He's been letting his pigs graze all over. Even if there is a trail, we'd never find it.
She drew a long breath and let it out in a tired sigh.
Oh, is there anything left in that bottle? She asked wearily.
My head still aches.
I'm an idiot, I said, looking around. I wish you'd mentioned it was bothering you sooner.
I walked over to a young birch tree, cut off several long strips of bark, and brought them back to her.
The inside of the bark is a good painkiller.
You're a handy fellow to have around. She peeled some off with a fingernail and put it in her mouth. She wrinkled her nose.
Bitter.
That's how you know it's real medicine, I said. If it tasted good, it would be candy.
Isn't that the way of the world? She said. We want the sweet things, but we need the unpleasant ones.
She smiled when she said it, but only with her mouth.
Speaking of, she said, how am I going to find my patron? I'm open to suggestions.
I have an idea, I said, shouldering my travel sack. But first, we have to head back up to the farm. There's something I need to take a second look at.
We made our way back to the top of Barrow Hill, and I saw how it had come by its name. Odd, irregular lumps rose and fell, despite the fact that there weren't any other rocks nearby. Now that I was looking for them, they were impossible to miss.
What is it you needed to look at? Denna said. Realize that if you attempt to go inside the house, I might be forced to physically restrain you.
Look at the house, I said. Now look at the bluff that's sticking out of the trees behind it, I pointed. The rock around here is dark, and the stones of the house are grey, she finished. I nodded. She continued to look at me expectantly.
And that means what, exactly? Like you said, they found barrow staves.
There aren't any barrows around here, I said. People build barrows in winters, where it's traditional, or in low marshy places where you can't dig a grave. We're probably 500 miles away from a real barrow. I walked closer to the farmhouse. Besides, you don't use stones to build barrows. Even if you did, you wouldn't use quarried finished stone like this. This was brought from a long ways off. I ran a hand over the smooth grey stones of the wall, because someone wanted to build something that would last, something solid. I turned back to face Denner. I think there's an old hill fort buried here. Denner thought about it for a moment.
Why would they call it Barrow Hill if there weren't real barrows?
Probably because folk around here haven't ever seen a real barrow, just heard about them in stories. When they find a hill with big mounds on it, I pointed out the oddly shaped hillocks. Barrow Hill.
But this is nowhere.
She looked around aimlessly.
This is the outside edge of nowhere.
Now it is, I agreed. But back when this was built? I gestured to a break in the trees to the north of the burned farmhouse. Come over here for a second. I want to look at something else. Walking past the trees on the northern ridge of the hill, gave a gorgeous view of the surrounding countryside. The red and yellow of autumn leaves were breathtaking. I could see a few houses and barns scattered about, surrounded by golden fields, or pale green pieces of pasture with dots of white sheep. I could see the stream where Denner and I had dandled our feet. Looking north, I could see the bluffs Sheem had mentioned. The land looked rougher there. I nodded mostly to myself.
You can see 30 miles in every direction here. The only hill with a better view is that one.
I pointed to a tall hill obscuring my view of the northern bluffs.
And that one practically comes to a point. It's too narrow on top for any decent-sized fortification.
She looked around thoughtfully, then nodded.
Fair enough, you sold me. There was a hill fort here. What now?
Well, I'd like to make it to the top of that hill before we set camp tonight. I pointed at the tall, narrow hill that was currently hiding part of the bluffs from our sight.
It's only a mile or two, and if there's anything strange going on in the North Bluffs, we'll have a clear view of it from there.
I thought for a moment.
Plus, if Ash is anywhere within 20 miles, he could see our fire and come to us.
If he's trying to keep a low profile and doesn't want to go into town, he might still approach a campfire. Denner nodded.
That certainly beats the hell out of stumbling around in the brush.
I have my moments, I said, making a grand gesture down the hill.
Please, ladies first.
Chapter 74 Waystone. Despite our general weariness, Denner and I made good time and came to the top of the northern hill just as the sun was setting behind the mountains. Though trees ringed the hill on all sides, its peak was as bald as a priest's head. The unrestricted view in all directions was breathtaking. My only regret is that the clouds had blown in while we walked, leaving the sky flat and grey as slate. To the south I could see a handful of small farms. A few streams and narrow roads cut meandering paths through the trees. The western mountains were like a distant wall. To the south and east I could see smoke rising into the sky and the low brown buildings of Trebon. Turning north, I saw that what the swineherd had said was true. There were no signs of human habitation in that direction, no roads or farms or chimney smoke, just increasingly rough ground, exposed rock, and trees clinging to the bluffs. The only thing on the top of the hill was a handful of greystone. Three of the massive stones were stacked together to form a huge arch, like a massive doorway. The other two lay on their sides, as if lounging in the thick grass. I found their presence comforting, like the unexpected company of old friends. Denna sat on one of the fallen greystones as I stood looking out over the countryside. I felt a slight prickle of rain against my face and muttered a curse, flipping the hood of my cloak up. It won't last long, Denna said. It's done this the last couple of nights. Clouds up, soaks for about half an hour, then blows over. Good, I said. I hate sleeping in the rain. I set my travel sack on the leeward side of one of the greystones, and the two of us began to set up camp. We each went about our business, as if we'd done this 100 times before. Denna cleared a space for a fire and gathered stones. I brought back an armload of wood and got the fire going quickly. On my next trip, I gathered some sage and dug up a few wild onions I'd noticed on the way up the hill. The rain came down hard, then tapered off as I started to make supper. I used my small cook pot to make a stew with the leftover pork from lunch, some carrots and potatoes, and the onions I'd found. I seasoned it with salt, pepper, and sage, then warmed a loaf of flatbread near the fire and broke open the wax on the cheese. Last of all, I tucked 2 apples in among the hot rocks of the fire. They'd be baked in time for dessert. By the time dinner was ready, Denna had amassed a small mountain of firewood. I spread out my blanket for her to sit on, and she made appreciative noises over the food as we set about eating. A girl could get used to this sort of treatment, Denna said after we'd finished. She leaned contentedly back against one of the greystones. If you had your lute here, you could sing me to sleep and everything would be perfect. I met a tinker on the road this morning and he tried to sell me a bottle of fruit wine, I said. I wish I'd taken him up on his offer. I love fruit wine, she said. Was it strawberry? I think it was, I admitted. Well, that's what you get for not listening to a tinker on the road, she chided, her eyes drowsy. Clever boy like you has heard enough stories to know better. She sat up suddenly, pointing over my shoulder. Look. I turned. What am I looking for? I asked. The sky was still thick with clouds, so the surrounding countryside was just a sea of black. Just keep looking. Maybe it will... There! I saw it. A flicker of blue light off in the distance. I got to my feet and put the fire behind me so it wouldn't dull my vision. Denna came to stand beside me and we waited breathlessly for a moment. Another swell of blue light, stronger. What do you think that is? I asked. I'm pretty sure all the iron mines are off to the west, Denna mused. It can't be that. There was another flare. It did seem to be coming from the bluffs, which meant that if it was a flame, it was a big one, at least several times larger than our own fire. You said your patron had a way of signalling you, I said slowly. I don't mean to pry, but it's not... No, it's nothing to do with blue fire, she said with a low chuckle at my discomfiture. That would be altogether too sinister, even for him. We watched for a while longer, but it didn't happen again. I took a branch about as big around as my thumb, broke it in half, then used a rock to pound both halves into the earth like tent stakes. Denna raised a questioning eyebrow. It points towards where we saw the light, I said. I can't see any landmarks in this dark. But in the morning this will show us what direction it was in. We reclaimed our previous seats and I threw more wood on the fire, sending sparks twinkling up into the air. One of us should probably stay up with the fire, I said, in case anyone shows up. I don't tend to sleep through the night anyway, Denna said, so that shouldn't be a problem. You have trouble sleeping? I have dreams, she said, in a tone of voice that made it clear that was all she had to say on the subject. I picked at some brown burr that clung to the edge of my cloak, pulling it out and tossing it into the fire. I think I've got an idea about what happened at the Morthon farm. She perked up. Do tell. The question is, why would the Chandrian attack at that specific place and time? The wedding, obviously. But why this particular wedding? Why this night? Why don't you just tell me? Denna said, rubbing her forehead. Don't try to tease me into some sort of sudden burst of understanding like you're my schoolmaster. I felt myself flush hot with embarrassment again. I'm sorry. Don't be. Normally I'd love nothing more than some witty back and forth with you, but I've had a long day and my head aches. Just skip to the end. It's whatever Morthan found while he was digging up the old hill fort looking for stones, I said. He dug something out of the ruins.